Thank you very much. And I was actually asked to come to both reflect on our work in New Hampshire and then to reflect on the day. The state of New Hampshire actually has had a mandatory community needs assessment benefit process for over 15 years. And it's not just for hospitals, it's for any nonprofit who has fund assets greater than $100,000. So it's quite an extensive system, and we have over 15 years of experience doing that. And I'm here to somewhat reflect on that, channeling not only our work as a foundation who funded much of that work, but also the Public Health Institute, which is called the Community Health Institute in New Hampshire, our state government, who was involved with that, and also the Foundation for Healthy Communities, which is a subsidiary corporation of our hospital association. And all of us came together to work on this over the course of the 15 years, which I think had a lot to do with its success and the fact that there were these diverse perspectives all committed to make this happen. I wanted to just share with you some of the challenges that we've had that I think you've heard today. Certainly, over that period of time, we certainly had the issues of data that we've talked about, and while we seem to be getting there, I think one of the things that I found that was unique over that period of time is we had to teach people how to use data. It wasn't just an issue of having data available, and when we finally achieved that, we also needed to help people know how to use it. Another reflection that I would say that we've had is we started out with requiring the needs assessment and this work being done every 3 years, which we're disappointed to see that that's what came out in the ACA, in the fact that we then changed our law to make it 5 years, because what we found people were doing was spending all their time assessing and not doing. And it's an expensive process, it's a time-consuming process, but the real point is to do something with the assessment. And a three-year period just wasn't long enough to be able to do that type of work. Some of the other challenges we had certainly were the difference of sectors, thinking there were a lot of people who really hadn't thought about public health, hadn't thought about primary prevention, and especially around the healthcare part of the system, and needing to bridge that language, needing to bridge that thinking, that was significant. A couple things I would like to mention of lessons learned was, and I think this is a reflection on today, is that we certainly are struggling still with language and standards and terms, and I think we all know we need to get those aligned, but we're not quite there yet. One of the things that came about that I heard a lot today about was a hospital assessment, a different public health agency assessment, different organizations each doing an assessment. And we found over time, the good news is after 15 years, people finally said, this makes no sense. It's about the community assessment. And we should write one assessment and one plan and one system for based on the community, not our institutions. And I think it was somewhat fatigue that led to that, and just after a while it became logical that what we really were talking about was communities. And so in most of our communities across our entire state, we just see this work done about the community, and it's driven by the community, and it's, the plan is about the community, not the organizations themselves. What will happen is some of the organizations do a secondary piece that's specific about their work, but it's always being driven by the one that's about the community, and I think that ended up being a long-term effect of working on it. One of the things that I really think we've heard a lot about today and that I saw over time was a beginning of embracing of going across all fields and having a broad definition of health. It started out with everyone talking about health and healthcare and disease, and now it discusses transportation, environment, schools, etc. And I think we've heard that today, more and more going in that direction, not necessarily sure where that ends up and how to roll that information up. Clearly, we have new leaders and new partners It is not typical now to see a hospital, even though they're a dominant force in a community, to be leading this work, or the United Way, which at the beginning it was. You'll now see just someone's turn in the community to lead the effort, and that they're seen as leading it from a group, and we've developed new leaders. One of the other things that was a consequence in our state, we don't have a strong public health system and infrastructure. It's being built, interestingly enough, in many New England states. And the whole issue of these community collaboratives coming together to work on needs assessments and prevention plans resulted in creating a solid base to build a public health network from which now, interestingly enough, a lot more public health departments are being built off of it. I think I'll stop there, and you can ask me some questions, and okay. We can include some other people.
One of the things, since New Hampshire has embraced those kind of community and needs assessment and community benefits and all that, what you mentioned fatigue and common sense that kind of led you to consolidate and do it as more cohesively and less by other institutions. There must be some other factors that affect the things in New Hampshire besides fatigue and common sense. So we have that in a lot of places, but we don't see that consolidation. And what, if any, does the lack of a public health strong structure, did that, in fact, contribute to the more collaborative community assessment planning process?
I think the culture probably in all your communities really determines what you end up for a system to do this work. In this case of New Hampshire, we are very local controlled. I think many of you know and are starting to see again as the presidential primaries are rolling out that we have a minimalistic state government and we have no income tax. And so things are driven to the local community. So it's a very natural behavior for people in the community to come around and think about what they want and what they don't want and use the resources they have. So it's a very much a cultural thing. It also is a frugal way of doing work. And I think it also, in our case, we have almost all community hospitals, and that makes a big difference because we don't have, we actually have one hospital in an area, and we don't have many private hospitals, and there's not as much competition, and there's more collaboration around health.
And people talk today about collaborative efforts among foundations and endowments. Is New Hampshire structured so that there's local foundations that you affiliate with or collaborate with, or units since you're a statewide endowment?
Yeah, I think it's, I would encourage all of you, if you haven't gotten your local philanthropy involved in this work, to do so. I notice Minnesota certainly talks a lot about that. The health funders in New Hampshire pretty much funded this work because state government didn't. But I think it wasn't just about funding. We funded the convenings, we funded technical assistance, we funded research. But a lot of it was also using our voice and our visibility to say this is important. And the other thing is that we used it to determine our own funding. For example, the funders in our state, whenever you submit a proposal to us, one of the questions is, what does this have to do with your community needs assessment and your community prevention strategy? It's not that we wouldn't fund something that's not in it, but it's certainly a criteria, and it brings up that visibility that's important. We do a series of 8 listening sessions around our state every year to hear what the people are thinking, and this year we did them based on the presentation of the most recent round of needs assessments. So by including that and the visibility of our coming into communities and saying what's really important is to listen to what your community has to say and what they've done, I think adds great voice and strength to it. So philanthropy certainly can play a great role in it.
That collaboration with philanthropies and local foundations and organizations, that coalition building, what would you say was the most difficult challenge in doing that from your perspective as a state endowment?
I think that probably the hardest thing was having people put their individual agendas to the side and helping people come to reach common ground and common interests. It started out as individuals coming in, vying for what's most important to me and what my perception is, to begin to move and shift it away from themselves and into the community. And I think that because we didn't have an agenda of our own, it all helped us do that work and allows philanthropy to do that work.
Okay, one last question then, if any, if there's other questions or reflections. Some of you who know me have heard the story about we had visitors from Scandinavia that were here visiting long-term care facilities and all that, and I was tasked from the university to bring people over to Charlestown, which is a continuing care retirement community, about 3,000 people. And before we went over, there was a seminar on how the elderly are incorporated, make a long story short, in Scandinavian villages and towns and made part of the community and all that. And realizing when we got over to Charlestown, just, you know, half a mile from here, that those 3,000 elderly people there made up the entire elderly population in some of those districts in Denmark. You know, I mean, there's just no scalability. In your experience, not that New Hampshire is so sparsely populated, but in terms of scalability and application to maybe more densely populated areas, any insight into that or transition from your experience that you would see as a particular challenge?
Well, I mean, we now have a uniform system in New Hampshire that has very specific definitions, specific requirements that are used from everything from us, you know, up in, on the Canadian border to the city of Manchester, which is the one of the largest placements of refugees and immigrants. And so it's a much more inner city kind of population. And the system that now has been developed has been able to be able to be used in all of those different communities. And the advantage of it is that it can roll up in a state. So I think that the tools have been created over time that can be used at any scale. And I would encourage that. And then what's great is it can roll up and to look at a whole state together, which is important use of it at the same time. And hopefully when we do this nationally, then it can be added up as a country, perhaps look at it across the whole country. But I don't think this is a process that requires you, you know, it makes a difference whether you're big or small, but it doesn't mean you can't do it.
Well, one of the things Mary and I talked about before the session was she, and maybe that's why things are successful in New Hampshire, said she didn't want to presume to, she would answer questions, but she would also welcome reflections that you have, not presuming that she can provide all the reflections on the day. So in that spirit, if anyone has any questions or their own reflections on Mary's presentation or what's gone on today, now's the time to either pose them or describe them, please. I knew I shouldn't have mentioned that cash bar. No one wants to ask a question, right? Anyone? Behind it.
What's the role that you have seen the business community play in the work over the last 2 years?
At the beginning, it was very difficult to even get business engaged in the process. Now they're an integral part of the coalitions that do this work in each community. I think one of the other things that's happened is the good news and the bad news about healthcare becoming a business is that they, business can more easily relate to this work. And I think there's been a lot more conversation around what health has to do with how it impacts their work and their workers, and I think that's made a huge difference. So now businesses are integral parts of this work, and also help having strong United Ways involved, because that's another vehicle through which business feels felt comfortable getting involved. Very often the head of assessment or work that was being done through United Ways was done by a businessman, and so that gave them a natural link. But they certainly are much more there at the table now, and are more comfortable with the topics. which is good. That was a hard thing to do at the beginning.
Any other questions or reflections?
Just a quick question about the 3 years versus the 5 years and maybe how you're going to adjust.
I'm not sure we're going to have a choice. I don't know what variation that's going to be. I think there's been some conversations of, you know, could you take 3 years and turn it into 2 3-year cycles and make it 6 years? Like, you know, maybe make it every other 3-year cycle. It's more of a complete process. So we're hoping that those conversations might still be open and that they listen to people who've been doing that. It just made a very significant difference to us to move it to 5 years on everyone's part. Really moved it much more to action and not just assessing constantly.
Well, on behalf of the Hilltop Institute, I want to thank Mary, first of all. Thank you for coming, and thank you in a special way to Cynthia Bodie Willis and Marsha Willis and her teams who put a lot of effort into the content and the organization of the day. So thank you again very much for coming, and we have a chance maybe to socialize out in the lobby. There's more food as well as the cash flow. Thank you.
Thank you.
One additional item. Those mugs in front of you are for use. Please take them so we don't have to lug them back to our office.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.